Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go, loaded on a Monday. Live in Los Angeles, this is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on iHeartRadio, we're on Fox Sports Radio, and we are right here, firmly planted on FS1. Love Mondays during the NBA Finals. 1 hour from now, where Colin was right, where Colin was wrong. Got some crazy ones this week. It was a wild weekend in sports. Not just NBA, and Joy Taylor is joining me. You'll have some stuff in about 25 minutes. It was a bordered on bizarre weekend for a lot of reasons.
Some might call it an all-timer.
Yes.
Of a weekend.
I would, for a lot of reasons. Let's start with the basketball. It has been established. This morning, Golden State's the better team. Kevin Durant's out. Klay Thompson didn't finish the game. Kevon Looney, who's become a very reliable big for them, did not finish the game. Iggy is hobbled. Boogie Cousins is not fully healthy, has no lateral quickness. I mean, can't move. By the way, Steph Curry was sick. They didn't score for 5.5 minutes on the road and won. Golden State's the better team. Okay, reverse these injuries. Kawhi couldn't play. Mark Gasol, Lowry don't finish the game. You think it would be close? Last night established the best team in the NBA. One team has far more talent. One team can withstand the most bizarre series of injuries I've ever seen before a finals into the finals. This series is no longer Toronto against Golden State. This series now is the Raptors versus an MRI. Can guys play? If Klay Thompson doesn't play in game 3, Toronto's going to win the game. You can't possibly win a game with Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson out and relying on an Australian center late who wasn't in the league a couple of months ago. We have an asterisks final. I don't remember the last one, but that's what we have, and that's what it is, and that's just what it is. It's an older, hobbled, injury-plagued, legendary dynasty against a cool story. And you see this. One of them is going to be in the history books. One of them is memorable. One of them's the Eagles. One of them's U2. One of them's the Beatles. One of them's the Who. The other one is the Macarena. It was really catchy for a summer, and I don't remember what happened to it. And then I have a story that comes out this morning. Kawhi Leonard rumors he's all but gone. The kid wants to live in California. So now we're potentially 9 days away from a complete rebuild for the Raptors. And that's okay. It's not a shot at Toronto. This is the way it works. You almost never have concurrent dynasties in basketball. You can't, right? Because if I'm a dynasty, you can't be a dynasty. Works that way in golf, works that way in the NFL. We did have the Lakers and Celtics in the 80s, both dynasties in their prime at the same time. And they played volleyball back and forth. Magic wins, Mikael Bird wins, Magic wins, Bird wins, Magic wins, Magic wins. Then a kid named Michael Jordan showed up and knocked them both off. But the truth is, this is the way it usually works. MJ's Bulls beat a series of forgettable teams, right? They beat Utah a couple times. They beat Seattle. They beat Phoenix. They beat Portland. The teams they beat never won a title. Shaq and Kobe's Lakers. Remember that? They beat the Sixers. They beat the Nets. They beat the Pacers. None of those teams ever won finals, and they're not in the record books, and they're completely forgettable. That wasn't even the best Sixers team. That wasn't even the best Pacers team. That wasn't even the best Nets team. So the point being is, you don't get concurrent dynasties. You get one, and that one is memorable. But as those dynasties get older, this happened to Magic, and this happens to all the great teams. You play these 20 extra playoff games. They're very intense. I mean, the Warriors got blown out 8 times during the regular season when they were healthy. What does that tell you? They can't wait to get to the playoffs. The problem is they're now in the playoffs and they're falling apart. Golden State's the better team. Reverse these injuries. For Golden State to go on the road and withstand what happened last night. Klay starts the game, can't finish. Looney starts the game, can't finish. They got big baskets late from Andrew Bogut. I mean, it is a testament to how deep Golden State is. It is a testament that they can go eight guys to the bench and still win a road game while not scoring for 5.5 minutes, and Steph Curry didn't score in the fourth quarter. We have established the best team in the NBA this year. And they were the best team last year and the best team the year before that. But the difference is this year, it's now just Toronto against an MRI. Let me transition to this. Boogie Cousins was unbelievable last night. I think Boogie Cousins got himself a contract. No, not with the Warriors. I think Boogie Cousins got himself a contract with a team like the Lakers. Let me explain. Bad teams, poorly run organizations like the Lakers, will give big contracts to people who have a good moment or have a good series. Well-run teams, you know, like the Patriots, bail on players, realizing after one great year, that's an outlier. We can't depend on that said athlete. Let me give you four examples. The 1995 Super Bowl. There was a cornerback for the Cowboys named Larry Brown. He was fine. He wasn't elite, but he had two interceptions and got named the Super Bowl MVP. One right there I'm showing our FS1 viewers was thrown right at him. So Larry Brown, a good solid corner, not spectacular, was the Super Bowl MVP. What happened? A franchise, the Raiders, that was becoming increasingly dysfunctional, drove the Brinks truck up to his house and paid him a fortune. And he was never, ever, ever worth half of his contract. Let me go to baseball. 2004 National League playoffs. A very solid player named Carlos Beltran. He had a monster playoff run. 8 home runs, 12 games. He batted over 400. Carlos Beltran in 2004 owned the National League playoffs. He put up numbers that were way beyond. He got hot. Way beyond him. What happened? The dysfunctional New York Mets paid him a fortune, and Beltran went to New York, where he had a couple decent seasons. He was a good, solid player, but he wasn't worth the $120 million they paid him. How about Darrell Revis? He'd bounced around the NFL. The Patriots brought him in for a year. And with Crowder on the other side, he had a Pro Bowl season. He was very, very valuable. Bill Belichick knows his corners and loves his corners. And he brought Darrell Revis in for a season, and he had a great year. But Bill realized, you know what? Man-to-man coverage, he's eroding. We're going to let him go. What happened? The New York Jets came in and paid him $70 million. I don't believe he even finished the contract. And finally, the fourth example is Timofey Mozgov, who I saw recently at a restaurant I like. He had a decent championship finals series with the Cavaliers. Not great, but decent. We suddenly all heard of Timofey Mozgov. He was a big, he was powerful. He was sort of reliable in small doses. And guess what? The Lakers went out and paid him a fortune. They couldn't get out of that contract 8 months later fast enough, and they found another sucker to buy it off. Four examples of poorly run dysfunctional teams always overpay for somebody who has a good moment or a good series. And last night, Boogie Cousins was terrific. He was terrific. But Boogie Cousins is hard on locker rooms. Golden State's always seen him as a guy long-term that really doesn't fit their style of offense or defense. In fact, he's a defensive liability at this point. But he gave you, as an incredibly skilled big, a wonderful night of basketball. And you could make the argument, and I think it's a good one, he actually won the game for him. He was incredibly valuable last night. And I think he got himself a contract. But the Warriors are simply too well-run to be the team that gives it to him. Keep your eye on the Lakers, as I've said. So dysfunctional, they can't land a top free agent. They don't have the assets to trade for Anthony Davis, and they're going to have to settle. Watch them pony up the big dough. for Boogie Cousins.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
There's a story out from somebody. I trust Ramona Shelburne. I know her. I trust her. If she says something, she's, you know, she knows what she's doing. So I'm going to put this up. She said she had a quote about Kawhi Leonard, and I think we all know that it's a, you know, he's leaning to coming back to California. She said, listen, I just think the guy has made it pretty clear. He wants to come back home to California. He has a house there. He always wanted the entire time. He wanted that before anything went south with the Spurs. It's pretty consistent desire. It's not like Paul George, where Paul George, he's from Palmdale, but he likes fishing and that kind of lifestyle. That's very Oklahoma. Here's the thing that I keep going back to. When you do make a big move, I've done this 3 or 4 times in my life. Joy has done this. You know, people think you know miles out when you make these moves, but it comes down to a day, a car ride, an epiphany, a conversation. Here's something to consider with Kawhi Leonard. His field goal percentage has gone down significantly in every series. He shot 55% against the Magic, 53% against the Sixers, 44% against the Bucks, 38% against the Warriors, and that's a beat-up Warriors with, until last night, no size. Dude is shot. He's a shot fighter. He is incredibly tired. Last night, he had 34 points and 14 rebounds, and I don't remember much. He was a minus 14, plus minus. I don't remember a lot of the shots. He's just playing minutes. He's getting points, but he's not elevating. He's not the same level. He's finding spots to rest, and I don't blame him. And here's the thing about Kawhi Leonard as he makes this decision. The best case scenario for Toronto is they're stuck with this roster for a year because Kyle Lowry's contract and Serge Ibaka's contract have 1 year left. Well, they're not going to get rid of them at the trading deadline, even though they could, because they'll be, if Kawhi stayed, in a playoff run. You're not going to get rid of those two veterans. You've got to keep those guys. If you're in the middle, you're a third seed, which they would be a second or a third or a first seed in the East. So you can't bail on those contracts at the trading deadline, though you could because they're expiring contracts and teams would line up for them. Everybody's looking for expiring contracts, but they can't. Then at the end of next year, those contracts for Lowry and Ibaka, they're up and you got big money for free agency. But is Kawhi Leonard sitting there in this series thinking, my knee hurts, I'm tired, the old guys are just going to be a year older, Pascal Siakam, he'll keep growing, but he's a wildly inconsistent player? Of course he is. He's a kid. He's a kid. And so, like, 2 or 3 things we know about Kawhi Leonard. 1, his knee is not healthy. And 2, he's being doubled and tripled by the Warriors. And even though he had good numbers last night, he looks tired. He looks, and the numbers don't lie. Kawhi Leonard's field goal percentage has gone down in 4 straight series. And so I think next year, you know, Toronto's got to sell him on old guys past his prime and a really talented long number 2 that's inconsistent, and next year will be better but still inconsistent. Now, the Clippers are a lot of the same thing, but the difference is L.A. is more attractive to most free agents, and they have the money now for a second guy beyond Kawhi. The Clippers right now are the Raptors, a bunch of role players, solid guys, 1 really good young player, a lot of role guys, a lot of smart cagey veterans. Good chemistry in the locker room. Well coached. Well run. But the difference is he can make a move in 2 weeks, go to the Clippers, and they have more money to offer another guy now. Because next year, Toronto, they don't have a first-round draft pick, I don't think. And they don't have any cap space, so they're not going to land a free agent. And you got to sell them on this. And what this is 4 straight series. Field goal percentage dropping. Knee isn't healthy. And he looks... In every series, he is getting doubled, and last night at times tripled. I think that's a hard sell for Toronto.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Every Monday at this time, hey, I make mistakes. I hold myself accountable. So when people say, Colin, you never admit you're wrong, what you're telling me is you don't watch the show. We do it every Monday at this time, where Colin was right, where Colin was wrong.
Where Colin was right?
I said Cleveland's got a lot of talent, but I question whether Freddie Kitchens, a rookie head coach, can get his arm around it and manage it from, you know, July when camp opens, you know, until like late December, January when his season ends. So this week, He had to go out and take a shot at OBJ, which he didn't want to do. You know, OBJ has a history of, you know, being a little fragile, a little high maintenance. But this is my question with Cleveland. They're an interesting mix of talent, ego, and youth. Now, talent, ego, and youth can win a bunch of games. But talent, ego, and youth are really hard on coaches. That's why New England teams tend to be veteran teams. That's why, like, Andy Reid generally likes some secure veterans on his team. Cleveland doesn't have any. They're, like, young. And Freddie Kitchens last week came out, and by the way, you don't think Odell Beckham heard that stuff? That Freddie's like, yeah, we miss him because, you know, the offense and stuff. This is my concern. It's not their talent, but it's the youth, the talent, the egos, and a rookie head coach. It is. This would be for Pete Carroll, Mike Tomlin, Belichick. This would be a lot to get your arms around.
Where Colin was wrong.
The Warriors' depth, I thought, was their biggest liability. Last night was, like, incredible. They had 25 bench points last night, and that doesn't count Boogie Cousins because he started. Quinn Cook had three huge threes. Sean Livingston was vital. Boogie Cousins did not count as a bench guy, but, you know, we kind of feel like at this point he's a bench guy. Andrew Bogut had 6 points in 7 minutes. I really thought this was the one way to beat them. You know, KD's out and they can't depend on their bench. It was magnificent last night. It was a showcase of next man up.
Where Colin was right.
Hate these big contracts in baseball. And I said Bryce Harper Phillies, that thing ain't lasting 12 years. He had a miserable weekend. He was 2 for 12. The Phillies got swept by the Dodgers. He had a really bad error, which led to a 7-run inning. And by the way, did you see what the Phillies did over the weekend? And I like Bryce Harper. And I think the Phillies have a lot of talent. Did you see what happened this weekend? The Phillies made a trade for Jay Bruce, who is a left-handed power-hitting outfielder that plays right field. Oh, wait, that's exactly what Bryce Harper plays. So they went and got a cheaper Bryce Harper. Yeah, this is not working, and I love Bryce Harper, but if you think this thing's going to last 12 years, by the way, the Dodgers completely passed on this, and they are running away 7 games up on the rest of the National League. Big, long 12-year deals for home run hitters. It gets in their head. Fan expectations are Babe Ruth, and you got a guy right now, Bryce Harper just isn't right, too much pressure, and bad weekend.
Where Colin was wrong.
Boogie Cousins. I mean, listen, I'm just not a boogie guy. I don't believe in the NBA. When you got about 7 guys who play and 12 men on a team, you're in that metal tube called an airplane all year. One corrosive guy can just, you know, the whole locker room implodes. He was great last night. And, you know, he's always been a little selfish, in my opinion. He was selfless last night. Not a Boogie guy, but I honestly think this morning he's why they won. I think Boogie Cousins won the game for him. I really do. I mean, they didn't have Steph, didn't have a field goal in the fourth. Clay was gone with 7 minutes to go in the fourth. I mean, Quinn Cook had a couple of jumpers, but Boogie's passing was unbelievable. You know, he came in and just set screens, got guys open. He actually was generally a terrible defensive player. Considering he's about 75%, he was not a liability defensively either. He altered shots. Huge night for Boogie.
Where Colin was right.
But Pascal Siakam. Okay, I kept saying. He's a nice young player. He's a baby. So game one, he was unbelievable. He was wilt. He was like 14 of 17 in game one. Last night, he's 5 for 18. Okay, and this is the reality of what he is as a player. I think you could make the argument he would come off the bench for the Warriors. If they were fully healthy, he would be a bench player for the Warriors. He's the Raptors' second-best player. And this is what I said about Chris Middleton. Chris Middleton, I do not believe, necessarily starts for Golden State. The NBA, when you get to the playoffs, it's not about your star, because everybody's got one once you get to the conference finals. Who can you depend on as your second scorer? And Siakam's a nice player. I'd love to have him on my roster. But he's not a legit two for a championship-level team.
Where Colin was wrong.
I said for the last several years, I thought boxing was dead. For sports that are not weekly like the NFL or daily like baseball, hockey, or the NBA, you need headlines. And for the last 7-8 years, UFC has dominated the headlines. But they feel like they've run out of gas to some point, and boxing is getting headline after headline and headline. Saturday night was a win for boxing, a win for DAZN, a win for anybody connected with that fight. Doesn't matter the champion lost. He's going to come back and give him a rematch in the fall. And yeah, I kind of thought boxing, listen, boxing will always have a diehard element that watches every fight. But when you are a sport that lives off, quote, events, like daredevil jumping, like boxing, like UFC, you gotta win headlines. Boxing didn't get them for about 7 years. I just read this morning that between ESPN, Fox, and DAZN, they have put $400 million into boxing. Okay, that is a win for the sport, which I thought felt like 7-8 years ago was dead.
Where Colin was right.
The NFL Rules Competition Committee Chairman Rich McKay wants to insulate Hail Mary plays from pass interference. Finally, they're coming to our side. These pass interference rules, you can't count Hail Marys. We've been saying this for years. A Hail Mary in football is what Black Friday is to shopping. It's not, you change all the rules for Black Friday. You open the store at midnight, you know, you load up things for people to rush in and buy stuff. It's almost like the mosh pit of concerts. When you have a concert, you do realize there are going to be about 80 people to 200 people in a mosh pit. And you let the security back off a little and you let them have fun in the mosh pit. But you can't have a mosh pit in the upper deck in 100,000 people at MetLife Stadium. The Hail Mary is a infrequently used jump ball in the NFL. And if you are to use pass interference regulations, you would call a pass interference on every one of these. And remember, in the NFL, pass interference is spotted where the interference happened. Not like college, where it's a 15-yard penalty. It could be a 60-yard penalty. So the NFL is finally coming to our side. It has to be viewed as a different play.
Where Colin was wrong.
I said when Gronk retired, I said, come on, man. Brady loves this guy. He was so good in the Super Bowl. He was so good in the AFC Championship. He is now a great situational player, and the Patriots are a great situational football team. Don't kid yourself. He's going to think about coming back. Gronk said this weekend, I'm not coming back. I'm 30. I'm retired. I'm on TV shows. I'm having a blast. My body feels great. I really did think, you know, you go to Gronk. It's November. He's done some wrestling shows. He's bored out of his mind, and somebody offers him $5 million. He was so valuable on like two or three plays in the Super Bowl and two or three plays against the Chiefs. I figured Brady could talk him back into it, but he says he's done. He's having a blast. He'll still make the Hall of Fame. Gronk is not coming back, he says.
Where Colin was right.
When Drake grabbed a coach's shoulders a couple of weeks ago, people freaked out. And I said, Drake is the NBA. He is the NBA. Okay, he's hip-hop, he's youthful, he's fun, he's trash-talking. To love a sport, you first have to be comfortable with the culture of the sport. And I got to be honest, with Kevin Durant out and Klay maybe out, Drake's become a talking point for a Canadian team whose star is on a constant mute button. And you can say what you want. The NHL would die to have the biggest star in the country getting into kind of faux squabbles with NBA stars. Listen, he did make me mad last week when he was trash-talking Draymond, but yesterday he wore the Home Alone hoodie. For Canada's second sport, basketball, to have its biggest stars embrace it has been a win, a huge win for the NBA and for the Raptors.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you like.
Jay Glazer has this NFL mailbag on The Athletic. That's the pay website which has good sports writing. So the NFL season's fewer than 100 days away, and he had a mailbag, and people asked Glazer a bunch of questions. And I think he's now officially banned from our show because this is one of his answers. Somebody asked him about, you have the keys to an NFL franchise. How many quarterbacks are you taking over Baker Mayfield? Give me your top five list in order. And he said, listen, I'm going to put Brady up there, and then Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, Andrew Luck, Deshaun Watson. But honestly, I think I'd put Baker right in the middle of that list, even over Russell Wilson. The hell? Okay.
That's like blasphemy to you.
Okay, listen. I am going to state some facts. Let's just talk about Baker Mayfield for a second. This is not a shot at him. These are only going to be facts. Baker Mayfield last year, with excellent running backs, above average receivers, and what Pro Football Focus thought was a top five offensive line, against winning teams, was 1-5, completed 59% of his throws, 10 touchdowns, 11 picks, and a passer rating of 77. I'm not saying playing winning teams is easy. But now I'm a hater if I don't acknowledge that Baker Mayfield, who, by the way, will be quarterbacking the youngest team in the NFL. Do you realize the three youngest teams in the NFL last year were Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Minnesota, and they finished 21-25-2? He's got a rookie head coach. Okay, Sam Darnold, who played, and this is a fact, with a significantly worse O-line, running back, and wide receiver set. Sam Darnold's record against winning teams, not as bad, 1-3. Completed slightly less, but had a better touchdown interception ratio and a better passer rating. With significantly less talent around him. And I'm not saying, I told you before, Darnold over 12 years, I'll take him over Baker. Big Ben, and again, it's hard if you're not Tom Brady to beat winning teams. Here's Ben Roethlisberger last year against winning teams. By the way, most of this with a ton of drama in the locker room. Completed 63% of his throws, 13 touchdowns, 4 picks, and a passer rating of 92 with a defensive head coach. Okay, so nobody's saying Baker can't play. That is not the point. Cleveland was 1-6-1 against winning teams. Baker was 1-5 and completed 59% of his throws. That is with an excellent set of running backs. Excellent, not good, excellent. That's with very good receivers, a star tight end, probably the best young tight end in football. I would say probably the best tight end in football, and an offensive line that had a good grade. Sam Darnold playing with basically a garage sale of parts that the Jets are trying to move off of had actually better numbers passer rating, better numbers TD to interception ratio. Are we crazy on this? Can we slow down a little? And not to mention, most people, facts. Cleveland's going to be the youngest team in the league. Fact, they have a rookie head coach. Opinion, most believe their offensive line is the liability of their team and won't be quite as good as last year, not very good at the tackles. That's an opinion, that's not a fact, but that has to be considered. Good Lord, better than Russell Wilson. What? Come on. Russell Wilson.
He gets disrespected quite a bit.
It's incredible to me.
I don't know if it's disrespect. It's just he doesn't.
Jay Glazer already put him ahead of Russell Wilson.
He just doesn't get acknowledged as much for what he has actually accomplished.
It's like the people that criticize Steph Curry. Is my TV giving me, is my television emitting a different video than your TV at home is?
Yeah.
How do people watch Steph Curry and not go, oh my God.
The hater shades make it very difficult.
How are people watching Russell Wilson with the worst line in the NFL 2 years ago, led the NFL in touchdowns. He took Doug Baldwin undrafted, a running back you've never heard of, never watched on college football, and led the NFL in touchdown passes with Pete Carroll as his head coach, as a defensive head coach. Not like they had Sean McVay or Kyle Shanahan or one of these offensive gurus, Andy Reid.
Maybe, is he saying, like, projecting forward?
I think Jay Glazer said he's better right now or something. I'm not comfortable with that opinion. And I don't think I'm a hater. Lord.
No, I mean, I think that Baker is going to be a great quarterback in this league.
Oh, God, can we slow down on great? How about let's just give him another year? He was a 59% completion with 10 touchdowns, 11 picks with good people around him. Can we slow down a little? Gah, better than Russell Wilson? The hell? It's like these people, Steph Curry is, I don't know, greatest shooter in the history of the world.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Rick Bucher, who apparently is mad at me. So you disagree with what I said today?
Man, I just, you're annoyed. Every take you've had has just annoyed me to no end. Let's start with the asterisks.
This final is an asterisks final.
What championship is not affected by injury in some way, shape, or form?
Well, the Super Bowl last year. Well, I guess Gurley was hurt.
Thank you very much. That's the example I was going to make.
What about the finals last year?
That's so long ago. It's not the final. You mean the Western Conference finals, because the real finals.
So you don't think I'm supposed to look at this and Klay won't play and KD is out and Steph is hurt and Biggie. How do I not think about that?
Kawhi Leonard is clearly not 100%. Kyle Lowry is playing with a bad thumb. It is a battle of attrition. There are always going to be, and probably your stars when it comes to basketball, carrying the load. You're going to have guys that are compromised. And it really becomes a survival of the fittest or the deepest. And so it's part and parcel with what happens. And I feel as if we are advertising everything that's going on with the Warriors, which is, by the way, understandable because this is their fifth straight finals.
Yeah.
This is the way physiology normally works outside of LeBron James, is that bodies break down when you play this many games this many times in a row. That said, the Raptors are far from 100%. You could make the argument that they're two best players are not anywhere close to 100%, and yet we haven't talked about that at all.
You don't think the series is over, Golden State?
No, not any. The Raptors had open shot after open shot. Watching the Warriors, I do not believe that they can stop the Raptors. The Raptors can stop the Raptors, but they have the opportunity to take wide open shots, and I would fully expect that they're going to make more than they're going to miss.
Okay, let's talk about Klay Thompson. What's your gut feeling, your info this morning? Because I don't think they can beat Toronto if KD and Klay don't play. When's the next game? Wednesday?
Yes, Wednesday is the next game. I would expect that Klay will play. Because he continued to play after the initial injury, which tells me that the leg locked up more than there was a tear.
Okay.
And so I would expect that they can get him right. But they are playing a high-risk game with the long-term health of any number of players. Andre Iguodala, he said it himself. It's not smart that he's playing. DeMarcus Cousins, 28 minutes. Not smart. If KD actually comes back, I can tell you there's people close to KD who have said he should not play. This is not a smart move by him. Now, KD is a gamer. Okay, I'm sure it's killing him. But if you were going to play, if you were planning on playing him in game 3 and 4, then why are you sending him across the country and back again with a soft tissue injury? It makes no sense. You would keep him at home, allow him to rehab, save him that trip on a flight with everything that goes along with that, and allow him to get ready. So I don't know, and I'm not disputing, I believe that Chris Haynes is tied into the KD network. What he says, I believe, but I believe this is KD pushing the envelope because he wants to be part of this, and Steve Kerr playing on that to let the Warriors know, hey, the cavalry's coming. Just hold on. If we can get one in Toronto.
It's almost psychology.
Absolutely. Makes Toronto prepare for KD and tells the team, we don't have to win this all by ourselves. KD's going to get here eventually. Just keep playing.
That's interesting. You bring KD to Toronto just so Raptors have to prepare for
yes,
him.
Yes, absolutely. And you have to, even though he never got – I don't know that he ever got out of his shower sandals.
I don't think he did.
And he has shot to this point. I've talked to a couple of people with this who have had this injury, and they said there is a high risk, you know, depending on where you are in the recovery period – there's a high risk of redoing it if you get out there and you're not right.
It's the Kawhi story is interesting. The last four series, his field goal percentage has gone down every series.
Yeah.
Do you think he's aware of that and that plays a part in him leaving Toronto, the sense that this is all I got.
Yeah.
We can't make a move for a year. Now, in a year, Lowry's contract, Ibaka's contract, but he's hurt. His knee isn't 100%. Mm-hmm. His numbers are going down. You know how it is when you leave and make one of these big moves, married, divorce, whatever it is, pros, cons.
Yeah.
What do you make of his body, his fatigue, and how it plays in his future?
I can only go by what I know of Alex McKechnie, who works for the Raptors, worked for the Lakers once upon a time. A lot of faith in him. And Kawhi has a lot of faith in him. So that would be actually a plus in the Raptors' favor. You also have some younger players like Pascal Siakam, who you would expect are going to get better and are on the rise. And you are in the Eastern Conference, which is infinitely easier to get through than the West. So as far as his shooting percentage, Kawhi doesn't. I think he's oblivious to that. I think he has the Derrick Rose mentality of, it's my job to bring us home, and I am going to try to do that. What's been disappointing for me is that Nick Nurse was hired to be an offensive guru. That was his label. That's what the Raptors were supposed to get out of him. He's done a tremendous job in setting them up defensively, but offensively, they get very predictable at times. And part of it's Kawhi gets it. He feels the responsibility. I have to go get something. And bogs down.
Let me defend Nick Nurse.
Yeah.
Defense is effort. Okay, yes. If you get guys to play hard, most of these guys are athletic. Offense is skill.
Yes.
Toronto's limited skill-wise, regardless of his great coaching.
But they lost game two, not because they missed shots, but because they allowed the missed shots to affect them getting back. The Warriors are great, but they got so much in transition. You talked about how physically hampered they are. I think you would agree with me. Toronto is the better athletic team.
Yeah, they're longer for sure.
Right. There's no excuse. It wasn't where the turnovers were, the length of the missed shots. There weren't enough of those for me to say, you know, the reason that the Warriors got everything they got in transition was because the turnovers at the top of the key or the long three missed threes created long rebounds. The Raptors were missing shots, open shots, and did not play with the same energy getting back. And that, to me, is how they lost this game.
What do you do with Boogie Cousins? Highly skilled, can be a little temperamental, massively vital last night. What do they do with him?
You can bring him back. You're limited in terms of how much you can pay.
Well, Bogut's probably done. If Kevin Durant left, you have no size. I mean, you have no size.
Yes.
Eventually, you're going to have to play a Clint Capella, a Giannis, Toronto again.
This is what's interesting about Boogie's situation. So I've talked to both him and Kevon Looney about where they want to play, where they would continue their careers.
Right.
Kevon indicated that he would, all things being equal, he'd rather stay with the Warriors. In fact, kind of insinuated he might even give him a little hometown discount to stay.
Yeah.
Boogie made no such commitment. So I don't know where he is. I also don't believe that the market is going to be that great for him. The GMs that I've talked to have said nobody's giving him a long-term deal. Somebody might load up on him for 1 year. And the question is then going to be, does Boogie want to get, say, eight figures when he can't get that with the Warriors? Is that going to prompt him to go someplace else? Or does he look at this situation and say, let me get one more year with these guys and really rehab my image and physically show everybody I can play a full season?
I thought last night, I would make this argument. If Kevin Durant doesn't come back, Boogie becomes an essential size. I mean, because Toronto's about as long as the league gets. Mm-hmm. I would make an argument, Kevin Durant doesn't come back, Boogie's going to have a nice series. He's going to be crucial.
He will. If I am Toronto, I'm making Boogie Cousins beat me. I'm saying, you want to post him up? You want to give him multiple runs at the rim? Have at it. He's not going to be able to sustain that energy, and that's going to slow everything down. They didn't really do that. And as a result, he was able to, as soon as the double team came, he's passing it and finding the open cutters. Again, like there were so many cuts and plays made at the basket that was a lack of effort and execution defensively by the Raptors.
All right. Couple quick questions. Will Kevin Durant play in this series?
Yes, because I believe it's going to be a long series now. So do I think he's going to play game three? I don't think he's going to play in game three.
My guess is game five.
That sounds about right. Again, part of this, what I'm wrestling with is what I've heard from people who don't think he should play, but knowing that KD wants to play and will probably push the envelope.
By the way, Joy, if you could look this up quickly, game five is when? So game three is Wednesday. Game four is Friday.
Yes.
Game
would be Sunday.
Is it Sunday or Monday?
It would be Sunday.
Okay, so we got 6 days for KD's calf.
Game five is Monday.
Okay, so game five is Monday.
Game five is Monday.
So we're a week away. See, I believe Kevin Durant plays in a week. That's seven days of treatment.
So Thursday is 4 weeks. You're almost getting to five.
Game three is on Wednesday. Game four is Friday. Game five is on Monday.
Right.
They're screwing with the schedule this year.
Yeah, I'm okay with it.
It used to be...
I mean, they want Game 7 to be on Sunday night.
Generally, I thought it was.
Well, it is.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So it's spaced out, yeah.
All right. Anything else you're mad at me about?
No, you know what? Thank you for letting me clear the air.
Hey, listen. It's gospel up here. Occasionally, there's some dissenters. There are some dissenters for my gospel. For the record, I said...
Just put the asterisk away.
Come on.
I got to tell you, I'm on Rick's side with this.
You guys don't think it's an asterisk final?
No, I don't, because there's injuries all the time. I mean, we don't talk about Golden State's championships that way. Kyrie was out.
Yeah, exactly. Their first one.
There's no asterisk there.
Or the Cavs when they got one in Cleveland. Is anybody saying LeBron's championship Cleveland was an asterisk?
Can you imagine Wednesday? Kevin Durant and Klay don't play.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a long season. Them's
the
breaks.
That's what's kind of making this really intriguing. Is that
you're one of those?
Even if KD doesn't play, like the speculation of whether he's going to play or not has added some spice to this.
See, because I think the series needs KD for juice. I think it needs juice. Like I want the Willis Reed moment. I want the Paul Pierce on a stretcher moment. I want Kevin.
But Iguodala wasn't enough. Klay, if he comes out and plays,
no.
Play, it's not
I want
be
Kevin Durant to come back. I think it adds to the juice of the series. Some finals don't have as much juice.
You could have DeMarcus, Klay, Iggy and KD all
none of them healthy
all stumping out there
I know
and with a Willis Reed